Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. Today, the city of New York sues ExxonMobil and four other big oil companies for damages from global warming.
City of New York is taking on these five giants because they are the central actors. They are the first ones responsible for this crisis, and they should not get away with it anymore.
We'll talk to the city's top lawyer today, Corporation Counsel Zachary Carter, and the Comptroller Scott Stringer about that. Also, how many people were killed by New York City sanitation trucks last year? Have any idea? The answer, zero. How many people were killed by trucks belonging to private carters? At least seven, just in the 1 year, according to a new ProPublica investigation. But all the businesses in the city have to use these companies with lower safety standards for their workers and worse accident records than the city allows for itself. Today, we'll look at the dangers to the public and their own workers from the city's private garbage collection industry. That's coming up. But we start with developments in the Russia investigation. You know how President Trump always insists there was no collusion? That's why when Special Counsel Robert Mueller was appointed, Trump said, sure, I'll talk to him, when he was asked this question by this reporter.
Would you be willing to speak under oath to give your version of
those events? 100%.
Well, by now, we know more of what they've been hiding. That Trump Jr., Jared Kushner, Paul Manafort meeting with the Russians that Steve Bannon called treasonous in Michael Wolff's new book, the president's involvement in drafting a misleading statement for Don Jr., claiming that meeting was about adoption, George Papadopoulos and Michael Flynn pleading guilty to lying to the FBI about their contacts with Russia, and the revelation that a very senior White House official who might have been the president directing Flynn to act, and so much more. So now there are reports that Mueller's team is getting ready to interview the president, but now he's getting cold feet.
We'll see what happens. I mean, certainly I'll see what happens. But when they have no collusion and nobody's found any collusion at any level, it seems unlikely that you'd even have an interview.
The president speaking yesterday, but can he even refuse? We'll ask in a minute who gets to decide. And that's not even the biggest development in the Russia investigation this week. Senator Dianne Feinstein has released the 300-page transcript of the testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee by Glenn Simpson, co-founder of the political research firm Fusion GPS, which hired British Russia expert Michael Steele to investigate Trump's ties to Russia for the Clinton campaign. Steele had already started that investigation with anti-Trump Republican money during the primaries. Steele's findings were eventually compiled into the so-called Steele dossier, which the FBI and now Mueller have used for leads. Let's take a look at what we can learn from the previously secret testimony and the new back and forth between Mueller world and Trump world over the president possibly testifying. Joining me are Washington Post correspondent Devlin Barrett, who covers national security and law enforcement and has been writing about all this, and WNYC senior editor for politics and policy and investigative reporter in her own right, Andrea Bernstein, who I understand curled up this week with the 312-page transcript of Simpson's testimony. Hi, Andrea.
It's true. I did. It's a good read.
And Devlin, thanks for coming on WNYC.
Hi, sure.
And let's start on this question of who gets to decide if the president has to be interviewed by Mueller's team if Mueller decides he wants that. Devlin, is the answer clear to you?
The answer is not clear, but there is sort of a history behind this question, which is suggestive of what the answer will probably be. And the answer will probably be that at some point Mueller is going to ask for a direct face-to-face questioning, and that gets will probably get negotiated between the two sides. The tradition in government is that a government official who would refuse to be interviewed by investigators might have to lose their job or face some other sort of demotion or sort of ostracism within the government. So I think the pressure would be on the president in that situation to come up with a way of saying yes, even if it's a qualified yes to an interview. But, you know, obviously, this is a president who doesn't believe in a lot of, you know, let's call it government norms, just as shorthand. And so, you know, I think that will be a tense negotiation. But I think the history suggests that if and when Mueller asks for an interview, the pressure is going to be on Trump to provide some kind of interview.
The president said this yesterday to argue it would be a double standard to force him to be interviewed under oath. This is about how Hillary Clinton was interviewed by the FBI in 2016 in the investigation into her use of a private email server.
And when you talk about interviews, Hillary Clinton had an interview where she wasn't sworn in. She wasn't given the oath. They didn't take notes. They didn't record. And it was done on the 4th of July weekend. That's perhaps ridiculous. And a lot of people looked upon that as being a very serious breach, and it really was.
So, Andrea, can you explain if that description of Clinton's interview is accurate? If so, why that would have been done that way, and if there is a justification for asking Trump to do it differently?
I don't know whether the Hillary Clinton testimony was sworn. I know that it was at the end of the investigation, and it appeared to be at a time in which the FBI had concluded that they were not going to bring any criminal charges, but wanted to sort of talk to her to tie a bow on their investigation. It's not clear to me what Bob Mueller has in mind for President Trump and whether this would be sort of something that they would do at the end of the investigation just to tie up loose ends, or whether it's something where they actually want to do fact-finding. Of course, there is plenty of precedent for a president speaking to special counsel. Bill Clinton, for example, is one obvious example.
Devlin, anything,
Brian,
to add to that?
Yeah, I was just going to jump in.
Yeah.
The president's description is not correct. They did take notes. It wasn't recorded, but it is very commonplace for FBI interviews not to be recorded. And the issue of an oath is frankly beside the point in an FBI interview, because it is a crime to lie to the FBI. So whether or not it's under oath, if they had caught her in a provable lie, she would have been charged with that. So I think in overall, the president's description is really not accurate. And I think the comparison is also, for that reason, doesn't stand up, because in all likelihood, if there were to be a questioning like that, it could very well be something similar to what happened in Hillary Clinton's case. And that would be following the basic, you know, rules and procedures of the FBI. And Andrea is absolutely right that oftentimes in an investigation, if you're winding it down, one of the last steps you take is you talk to sort of the top dog, so to speak. There are examples of that. You know, for those who remember Mayor Koch, you know, one of the last things they did in an old corruption case involving parking violations was agents scrambled off to City Hall years ago to do a quickie interview with the mayor to make sure there wasn't anything the mayor could tell them or anything they should know from the mayor that might change how they were going to prosecute that case. But it was a last measure, and it was a sign not so much of Koch being in trouble, but that, you know, a box needed to be checked and they needed to make sure they hadn't missed anything.
And in the Clinton case, there have been charges by Republicans and conservative media that the fact that Clinton was interviewed only after the FBI decided that there were no charges to be filed against her shows that the whole thing was rigged. That how could they decide whether or not they were going to charge her unless they interviewed her while still making that decision, which seems to be the conditions under which they would interview Trump. Can you shed any light on that context?
Yeah, I think, frankly, that's just a very significant misunderstanding of how investigations typically work. You know, I think the presumption behind that characterization is that investigations often have Perry Mason moments where, you know, some otherwise sophisticated or smart criminal suddenly says, "Oh, you got me. I'm done. I'll give you everything." And that's not really the thing that happens very often. And it certainly is less likely to happen at the end of a year-long investigation where lawyers on both sides have a pretty good understanding of what's been happening all up till that point. So it is commonplace for a major figure to be interviewed at the last possible moment, and it is, frankly, pretty common for investigators to already have a good sense of what they are or are not likely to charge as a result, you know, well before that interview takes place. This is in many ways, standard procedure for the Bureau. Now, there are things that are different about the Clinton investigation because it's Hillary Clinton and because there's a lot of legal firepower on the other side of that table. But overall, you know, procedures were followed, and that is how this works in many cases.
And I think it's also worth just reminding people that Hillary Clinton was not the president, is not the president now. Here we are.
Right.
14 months after the election, and Trump is still talking about, well, what about Hillary Clinton? Also, everything that Trump has done as a private businessman and now as president, including these remarks yesterday, indicate his worldview that law enforcement is transactional and serves a person or persons or company. And he does not seem to believe in a sense of a broader rule of law
right.
or responsibility to something other than that.
Even saying that Republicans should take control of the Russia investigation, which means that he sees it as a partisan thing rather than a neutral thing. And just to fill in one blank or two on your reference, Andrea, to Bill Clinton as president testifying under oath, for people who don't know that history, he had to testify under oath as president to the Whitewater special prosecutor in that investigation, which started with the Whitewater land deal in Arkansas, but following the evidence, led through a circuitous route to his sexual relations with Monica Lewinsky, about which he lied under oath, and that's why he was impeached and had to stand trial in the Senate. So that certainly sets a presidential precedent for Trump. So let's get to the Glenn Simpson testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee about the Steele dossier. Again, Simpson is co-founder of the political consulting firm that hired British agent Michael Steele to investigate Trump's connections to Russia during the 2016 general election, after anti-Trump Republican money had first hired Steele during the primaries. Andrea, I'll give you a blank slate here since you read the whole transcript. I know you've been following the Trump money trail and how it might relate to the Russia investigation. What's your own headline in terms of whatever you were looking for?
Well, what I thought was quite fascinating about this testimony broadly were a couple of things. One is what is lost in a lot of this discussion is what it is that Fusion GPS, which is Glenn Simpson's company, was looking at. And he goes over in detail, we were looking at Trump's business associations, we were looking at his foreign businesses, we were looking at all of the court records, public documents, filings in the U.S. and abroad. And one of the things that they honed in on as sort of the reason that they ended up hiring Chris Steele was that Trump had made a number of trips to Russia, talked about doing business deals in Russia, but never did one. That struck Glenn Simpson, who in his prior life as a reporter at the Wall Street Journal had done a lot of reporting about the Russian mob, about Russian businesses, about Russian oligarchs. That struck him as really strange. And what he said was, we got to the limit of what we can find out through documents, so we went and hired Chris Steele to see if there was more information we could find out through human sources. The other thing that is so apparent is there are two sets of questioners. There's one for the Democrats and one for the Republicans. And what the Democrats are talking about is, what did you find and what were you looking at in the Russia inquiry? And what the Republicans want to talk about was something else entirely, which was simultaneously to his work for being hired by the Democrats to research Trump's businesses. He had also been hired by Prevazon to help poke holes in the story of Bill Browder. And this is a complex money laundering case that was brought here in New York in the Southern District. But this relates to what happened last week and the Democrats' referral of Chris Steele to the Justice Department for lying to reporters. And
the Republicans' referral of Chris Steele to the Justice Department.
Right, which happened. And the what the sort of broader narrative of what is happening there is that the Republicans, as we know, two Trump aides have pleaded guilty, former Trump campaign aides, George Papadopoulos and Mike Flynn, to lying to the FBI. And what the Republicans said is, well, Chris Steele also lied to the FBI because he misrepresented his relationships with reporters. And what you can see in this testimony is that there is a lot of an attempt to try to throw up a lot of dust around that and a lot of confusion. What was Chris Steele doing? What were your real motives here? Were you somehow also lying? So that the takeaway to the public becomes, oh, everybody's lying. Why should we believe anything? And it
the Republicans were trying to make Glenn Simpson as a witness seem guilty of something to distract attention from the president who he was testifying about.
And or Chris Steele, but without trying to get to the bottom of the facts, which is, according to 17 intelligence agencies, we were attacked by the Russians. Do you have any information that could help us understand that?
All right. But on what information he was able to reveal, because certainly Democrats got to ask him questions, too, that might have been more content-oriented, Glenn Simpson himself wrote an op-ed in the Times last week, as you know, in which he said Congress wasn't taking his suggestions that they look into Trump's bank records with Deutsche Bank for something relevant to Russia and certain other financial records for evidence of possible money laundering. So how much do you know, Andrea, and since this is your beat, about why he would be pointing in those directions?
Well, the Deutsche Bank question that has been raised is whether the Deutsche Bank, so many banks would not loan to Trump, the businessman, because he had this history of bankruptcies. And more than that, he had a history of really upsetting banks by reneging on his deals with them. And he had a hard time getting loans, and Deutsche Bank was one of the few institutions. So there's a question that's been swirling around the investigations, and I don't want to suggest by putting out there that I believe it's true, but it's a question, who backed those loans? Did somebody with ties to Russia back those loans or somehow promise or guarantee them? So that is the issue with Deutsche Bank. The other issue that Glenn Simpson raised that he was looking at was someone who is very well known to us, who is Felix Sater, who was Trump's business partner on the Trump Soho that we have obviously talked a lot about. One of the interesting things that he said to me, or that he said in this testimony, Glenn Simpson I'm talking about now, was that he noticed that Felix Sater had ties to a Russian organized crime family that was believed to be, in extreme layman's terms, one of the worst Russian crime families. So this was something that he said he had found in the course of sort of investigating Trump the business, and that he thought Congress should be looking at more rather than who was he working for and is there some subplot here of what he was doing?
And listeners, we could take a couple of phone calls with questions on the developments in the Russia investigation this week, including prominently the release of this 300-page transcript of testimony by Glenn Simpson from Fusion GPS about the Christopher Steele dossier that was released by Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein as the lead Democrat on the Judiciary Committee where Simpson testified. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692 for WNYC's Andrea Bernstein, who's on this beat, and Devlin Barrett, who covers law enforcement and national security for The Washington Post. So Devlin, Simpson's op-ed in The Times also said evidence of collusion was pouring in from independent sources during the campaign. But so far, we have all these contacts with Russians that Trump world people were trying to hide, but no final piece of who shared what with whom that would be part of a collusion quid pro quo. Does the Simpson stuff get us any closer to a conclusion that there was collusion in the final sense?
I don't think Simpson's testimony or frankly Fusion's work provides a final answer. I think the whole point of their work was, you know, to both to the FBI and to reporters and to whoever would listen, you know, you all should look into this and see if what we think is there is actually there. I think that's been Simpson and Fusion GPS's point the whole time, which is that, you know, we think we've found some alarming indicators here, but it's going to take you know, investigators like with subpoenas and more to really get to the bottom of it. And that's really Mueller's job. I mean, I think what Andrea said, what leaps out about the transcript is that I don't know why anyone expects Congress to answer these questions or solve these riddles, because Congress, as that transcript shows to me, is locked in a very partisan, bitter tug of war over which direction this all should go in. And it's hard for me to imagine that produces a unifying answer to any of those points.
In your article this week, Devlin, you wrote about a couple of striking pieces of Simpson's testimony. One tragic and maybe criminal bombshell is that Simpson basically testified that someone has been murdered as a result of the Steele dossier. How much of an indication did he give of who and by whom and why?
Yeah, that's a really tricky thing, and it really, frankly, I think underscores the whole fight about Fusion GPS and Simpson. So, just to back up, what happens in the testimony is that Simpson's lawyer, in trying to protect the secrecy and the identity of the sources for this information, says somebody's already been murdered over the dossier, and you know, we've been nosing around on that notion for not just since the transcript, but for a long time before that, and. For what it's worth, neither Fusion GPS nor anyone else that we've spoken to has attributed any particular killing to anything to do with the dossier. So it may simply not be true. What I think is fair and true, though, is that Fusion GPS has been worried ever since the dossier came out that their sources could be hurt. And obviously, if you look at events of 2017, there were some people who were on the outs with the Russian government who were killed. And I think that's a cause for concern for the Fusion folks and for others. But, you know, that claim, as sensational and as alarming as it may not actually be true. And again, that gets to the nub of a lot of what people argue about when it comes to the dossier and Fusion GPS.
Let's take a call. And Devlin, I think this one is for you from Chris in Garden City. Chris, you're on WNYC. Thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call. To continue with that point, one of the things that I was concerned about from the testimony was that apparently one of the pieces of intelligence that went to the FBI was actually somebody in Trump's campaign organization, and that was back in 2016, so somebody actually went to the FBI, and I'm kind of curious to know if there's any... if you guys are trying to figure out who that might be, or possibly there's that whole concern about the person's safety.
You wrote about this, Devlin,
sure.
Right?
Sure. Yeah, and it's another, again, it's another point where, you know, you can see the divergence in opinions on Fusion GPS. So Simpson says in the transcript that someone was concerned inside the Trump organizations and picked up a phone and reached out to the FBI and gave them a heads up. We're told that he's actually, when he says that, he's actually mangling what happened. And that's actually a reference, although not a perfectly accurate one, to what happened in late July of 2016 when the Australians reached out to the U.S. and said, hey, by the way, we just saw that a bunch of DNC emails have been hacked, and we wanted to alert you to a conversation that happened back in May with one of our people where a Trump campaign advisor named George Papadopoulos was drinking in a bar and said the Russians had dirt on Hillary. And we didn't think of anything of it then, but now we wanted to let you know. What Simpson's describing, we are told, is actually that event, but he kind of mangles and compresses it into being one person when it's actually two things. It's the Australians giving a heads up on what George Papadopoulos may have said in a bar a few months earlier.
But another piece of Simpson's testimony about the Steele dossier that you wrote up was that someone connected to the Trump campaign or to a Trump company had also spoken to the FBI and corroborated some of what Michael Steele was finding. That's tantalizing, but also very unspecific. Are there any more details about that?
Well, but again, that's a mangling of the Papadopoulos sequence.
It is.
What Glenn seems to be misunderstanding at that time, and remember, this is an interview back in August. This is before a bunch of things we later learned about Papadopoulos came out. But what Glenn seems to be mangling is the notion that someone was voluntarily giving them information from inside the Trump world, when what in fact had happened was someone had volunteered to the FBI, hey, you guys should go look at this person.
Also, I mean, in reading the testimony, what he says is inside the Trump Organization. Well, the Trump Organization, does that mean Trump Org? Does that mean campaign organization? Does that mean broader world? The questioners come back and ask him what you were talking about. And the context for all of this is that Chris Steele is going to speak to the FBI, and he goes to them fairly early on when he finds this out because he's so alarmed. And what comes back to Chris Steele and Glenn Simpson is that the FBI has other reasons for believing this might be true, that it's not all based on the dossier. But when he says Trump Organization, it's entirely consistent with the Australian ambassador learning this from George Papadopoulos. And just one other thing on that, one of the things that was gripping to me about reading this is what they knew in July of 2016. I mean, now we've had four indictments / guilty pleas and a lot of reporting and a lot of reports by the U.S. government on what happened. But they were talking about things, and this was, you know, a year before the John Trump Jr. emails came out about the Trump Tower meeting. One of the things that they were hearing was that the Russians were trying to give the Trump campaign dirt on Hillary Clinton. Well, they were hearing that in real time while it was happening, according to this testimony. We all found out about it a year later when Don Jr.'s emails were released. So there was a few other things like that. The role of Carter Page, who is not one of the people who's been indicted, but is somebody who—
Another Trump campaign advisor.
Right. Another Trump campaign advisor who was actually already had been caught up on wiretaps investigating Russian spies, that the Fusion GPS and Steele knew about Carter Page in July of 2016. He was mentioned in the dossier way before he became a figure that we were focusing on as having some possible role in this Russia investigation. So we don't know that there is a conspiracy. This testimony doesn't really say that one way or another, but what it does say is there was a lot of information available at that moment about some of the things that have later borne out to be true.
Andrea, here's a caller with a question for you, I think, on the money trail. Raphael in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hey, Raphael.
Hi, Brian. Happy New Year. Question occurred to me and my wife. If Mueller subpoenaed Trump's tax records or some loan information from Deutsche Bank, would we, the public, know about this in a timely fashion, or would Trump know about it in advance of any deposition that he had to give?
That's a good question.
So, as I understand it, Mueller is able to get whatever he wants from the IRS without notifying the president because it's a government agency. So that would include Trump's tax returns. The issue on the— there has been reporting, I think the most comprehensive reporting on the Deutsche Bank subpoenas has been in the Wall Street Journal. Very often we find out about what's happening in these investigations because the parties that are being subpoenaed report it. So there is some information that seems to be coming from that end of things, that Deutsche Bank was asked to supply information. Now, we don't know exactly what it is. There's a lot of different investigations going on. There are investigations in various U.S. attorney's office around the country, as well as Mueller's office. So it's not entirely clear what that is. And there are no leaks from the Office of Special Counsel. So they speak to us through their court documents.
Devlin, is that your understanding, too, with all that's been said about Trump releasing his tax returns and he claims that he's not going to do it while he's under audit by the IRS, which seems to be a permanent state, that Mueller doesn't need any kind of permission from Trump and that the IRS couldn't even resist? If he wants to look at his tax returns, he can just look at his tax returns?
He has to have a valid reason to want to look at them. But most of the folks I've spoken to believe that at this stage of an investigation, Mueller would have had a credible reason to seek the tax returns. And, you know, I think most of the smart lawyers I talk to think that Mueller has had those returns in hand for months, and that, you know, the president's legal team is, you know, almost certainly, you know, assumes that and respond and acts accordingly. But to the caller's question, I don't think there's any reason to expect that Mueller will ever release a tax return or make it public unless it is some part of it ends up being part of some, you know, court document or, you know, charging document or something like that. I don't think we should expect Mueller to, you know, answer essentially a political question of what's in Trump's tax returns.
So this all brings us back for our last few minutes to the prospect that Robert Mueller's team might interview the president in the coming weeks. If the president himself is under investigation, Andrew, you first, what would they be seeking to prove or disprove about him with questions to him in that session?
What he knew and when he knew it, I think, is the shortest way of summarizing that. As Tim O'Brien, who was sued by Trump, has pointed out, and whose attorneys deposed Trump during, this was about 10 years ago, during a defamation lawsuit that Trump unsuccessfully filed, the Trump speaks under oath the way he speaks to us, which is not in a clear, straight, fact-based line. So given that already two of his former aides have pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI, he is going to be it's going to be a challenging situation, I think we can safely say.
Did you want to add something to what Devlin was saying before about the IRS?
Yeah, I mean, I think that absolutely, Mueller is not in the business of releasing documents to us. However, I have been following the litigation in the Paul Manafort case. He's one of the people who was indicted. And there was a subplot about Manafort writing an op-ed with, co-writing it with a Russian colleague who's believed to be a Russian spy. And Manafort said, no, I didn't do that. And Mueller released in a court document all of Manafort's track changes. So the special counsel's office has shown itself willing to release this information if they believe that it would help them successfully make a point before the court. So that is the context in which we might see it. So we might see it in some kind of report or something like that, or we might see it in some kind of legal filing later on down the line.
So Devlin, this wrap-up question to you, if the president himself is under investigation, what would Mueller's team be seeking to prove or disprove or learn about him with questions to him in that session if they get to interview Trump?
Well, I think the two big ones are, what did the president know and when about what Mike Flynn was talking, former National Security Advisor Mike Flynn was talking to the Russians about? That's a big one. And the other big one, frankly, is, what did the president know and when about anything that the Russians were doing with hacked Clinton or Democratic emails? And the answer to both those questions may be nothing. But if you're asking what's the most important question to answer in this process, I mean, to me, those are the two big ones.
Well, one story this week related to what you just said is that Mueller recently added to his team an expert in cyber crimes, which makes sense since what Russia apparently stole was Democratic Party emails to use against Clinton.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I've been flummoxed for a while as to why they didn't start with a cyber crimes prosecutor. That one was kind of a head scratcher for me from the beginning.
Yeah, because that's like the central issue, right?
Correct. Apparently, you know, they've done it now, which makes me think that, you know, they still have a significant amount of work to do because that person, as far as we can tell, only joined a couple months ago.
And just briefly, Devlin, neither of you have mentioned obstruction of justice. We've all been talking about possible collusion-related crimes during the campaign. There's also the firing of Comey and other things that Trump may have done that may rise to the level of obstruction of justice to stop Comey or Mueller or anybody else from looking into these things, right?
Which obstruction is a huge part of this investigation. No question. Obstruction is a huge part of this investigation. Whether anyone gets charged with it or how Mueller decides to ultimately proceed on that point is a different matter. But just from the investigative activity, you can tell obstruction is a huge piece of what they're working on.
I think we're not done doing segments on the Russia investigation, but we're going to have to leave this one here for today with Devlin Barrett, who covers law enforcement and national security for The Washington Post, and WNYC, senior editor for policy and politics, who's all about the Trump money trail these days, Andrea Bernstein. Thank you both.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.